Hello and welcome to Two Friends and a Baby.
I'm Tom.
I'm James. The baby again is not here.
Because we're in a hotel.
Yeah, this is a bit random. This might be one of the strangest things I've ever done in a hotel room.
Funny enough, obviously when you're like a film star and stuff, we're nowhere near that level, obviously. But
speak for yourself.
Someone's going off to a party tonight.
Well,
wasn't invited because I don't work in the same office as James.
No,
but a lot of the time when they do like press junkets and so on and so forth, it is in the same hotel as, like, you know, they do it in a hotel room.
Yeah, of course.
And then they come into the room. It's more of a suite, so it doesn't look like there's not a big bed in the way.
No, but sort of clambering to find space. I'm sure people have done stranger things in hotel rooms with stranger people and stranger substances. Yeah. Than this water we are currently drinking.
No, I did. When I walked in, obviously, the trick to any hotel is walking like you own the place.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. If you look in like you don't know where you are, they'll be like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah, because obviously, technically, you're not allowed guests up to your rooms and so on and so forth.
No.
But it's a bit of a weird thing like that, because people do it.
Yeah.
And it's just like...
Why shouldn't you? You know, you're paying however many hundreds of quid for a room. You should be able to have up there who you want and do what you want to them.
Exactly. Do whatever you like.
To whatever hole.
No, James. We're having such a nice day. But, and so obviously I came in and I nearly got in the wrong lifts up to the conference suites instead of this. But where are we, James? Where is this place that we're in?
I don't know if I can give too much information away, but we are on the Albert Embankment,
Albert
I believe,
Embankment, yeah,
in central London.
We can name the hotel.
Can we?
Oh.
I might give away too much. People might be able to track me down.
Okay.
How instant are these podcasts?
It's not that instant. we're at the Park Plaza Hotel on the south bank of just up from Vauxhall.
Yes, up from Vauxhall.
So hopefully you won't, but you might be able to hear the main line out of Waterloo, train line.
Considering the number of trains that have already gone past and I haven't heard a damn thing.
Oh, I hear them all the time.
No, look at that. Okay.
Everyone's just...
Okay, didn't even register on the And if I'm trying to sleep here in a gin-fueled, like, zonk out, I don't even use words at the moment, that's going to really drive me up the wall. And I can imagine it probably drive all the other customers up the wall, so I'm quite glad.
Yeah.
That's not particularly
loud. Obviously, these are all Sanford, but you're still going to be able to see something.
Yeah.
But it's quite interesting because you don't come down to London that much anymore. Well, but never came down that much anyway. But now you don't even...
I think I would come down to London two or three times a month,
yeah.
But usually for concerts or if my band was playing a gig, like it was very much a, I'm down for the evening, I'll be gone at the same time. But yeah, since baby Luna has come along, a lot of those, you know, gallivanting, all those little excursions, I've had to take a back seat. I'm actually in London with work. I won't mention the name of the company because I could get in trouble.
But
there.
But again, we can say, just imagine his life. Is the American office, but in the UK.
Yeah.
So, like, the English.
It's very
office.
Much an office job, but what are you going to do? We have biannual conferences. They're usually at one end of the country for whatever reason. This one's in London, and that's why I'm here. So, I thought it would be a really good chance for us to get together.
So, what was the conference like today?
Tedious.
Yeah, but I mean, like, where was it? Was it in the conference rooms in the hotel?
Okay, so this is another really surreal part of this. I didn't realise how many, you probably already knew this because you live here and you love it, how many of these London buildings go even further into the ground.
Yes.
When I rocked up today, considering these conferences we usually go to in the middle of nowhere out in, I think I mentioned one of the conferences on our previous podcast, actually, the one that was in the middle of nowhere.
The one where you met Beth. Well, the one where you first
saw
her
on the track. Yeah, the one that was like surrounded by the mist, like the film The Others.
Punk goth.
Yeah, there's like, they're just big. Manor houses. If there's a basement, it's probably full of wine. You know, we're in central London. I rocked up and I thought, okay, we'll probably go to the conference suite. It's probably on the ground floor, so people can escape for a fag easily. No, we're in sub-basement 4.
Yeah.
So we drop in a lift. You feel the temperature drop immediately. You're in a place that barely echoes, barely feels like anything. It's soulless, but it's strange. but it was all right. It's a new experience for me, so I'm not.
I tell you what, that epitomises London. Completely. It's like, it's the people in London are always moody, and it's just like, so how can we make this place worse? Dig down. Just dig.
Just keep
down.
Digging until it gets darker
and
colder
darker.
And there is no happiness left
which I find interesting, because obviously you think when your basements are always cold,
yeah.
In the summer they're really hot, in the winter they're really cold. The tube line, the tube system in London, right, which is great, famous and everything, always hot.
That's because of the people.
Yeah.
But if you were to go on there when there's no one there.
Oh no, I think no matter, even when it's closed, when it's like late night and stuff, the tunnels are always dry heat.
Dry heat.
It's always the time.
Do you not think it's because they're so deep in the ground that they're like really close to the Earth's core and you're actually getting, like, you know...
Magma.
The heat of the planet.
No, I don't know what it is, but it's interesting because it's the way it's worked. Because also, it's so dry down there and it's so dusty they also, and it's something they've had to do since the invention of, since they started doing the tubes and stuff, like, doing the tunnels and stuff, they have to have vacuum cleaners down there.
Serious?
The tunnels. Yeah, because fluff builds up and it's a fire hazard.
Is that what that huge, like, blowing sensation you get between... Okay, because this was going to be my next point. This other thing that weirds me about the tube. You can be standing on a platform, it can be completely hot, cold, dry, whatever you say, and then you'll move into a tunnel or a set of stairs to go to the next line or to get out of the platform, and suddenly you're just hit with this immense wind for no reason. It just, it makes me want to drop to the floor and, like, you know the Michael Jackson Earth Song video? Yeah. It's like, digging, ah! It kind of feels like that. I wish I had longer hair, so it sort of blows in the wind.
And with Michael Jackson.
But
I think that's ventilation, because obviously you feel it when the train comes down, and you get this kind of snap as it comes out the tunnel. It's especially the deeper ones, such as the Piccadilly line, where the tunnels just about fits the train.
It comes out covered in magma.
Yeah, it comes out covered in molten magma.
Magma.
But it comes out as it, because it's pushing the air down in front of it. It's like a plunger.
Yeah.
And it pushes the air out, so it snaps. So as you train's about to come out, you feel a big rush of air.
Yeah.
And then there's this almost like a snap as it opens up into the platform. You don't get that on the District Line or Circle Line, because they're very much like a metro system taken from the American style of New York. Then New York's metro system.
It's kind of the same sensation as when you're on like a national rail train and you're going in one direction and another train goes past you that's obviously going in the opposite direction. And if you're asleep, it's going to wake you up and you feel like you're going to get shot or something. Bush! And what the fuck was that?
Yeah.
Something very much along those lines.
It's really good. But I mean, was the conference like, was it literally just presentations? Was there any sort of gay or corporate, like, oh, so we have to get into teams now, and what we want you to do is we want you to draw a picture detailing where you think the company's going to be in a year's time.
I need to be very careful about what I say, because these walls could be thinner than we think. It was what a number of people in our organisation refer to as death by PowerPoint, where you sit and you just watch presentation after presentation after presentation about how well the company's doing, new products, things you're going to have to do.
So it's more like an AGM than a concert. It was more like, this is how well we're doing. It's like more like an AGM for the shareholders, where there was no sort of activity to get you buzzing and get you energised.
No, I mean, this is a 2-day affair. The sort of, in interactive section, if you will, comes tomorrow. For this particular day, it is
off.
Death by PowerPoint, followed by an evening of immense drinking. The sort of gin fueled evening I mentioned in the previous podcast is yet to come.
So you're coming out of here, walking up to
the London Eye,
which is going to be further than you think, but it is quite a straight walk up.
I've Google mapped it. Don't worry.
It's nice. I've jogged down here before.
Well, good for you. I've run the London Marathon. Did I mention that ever?
Sorry. Can I point out? You've walked London Marathon.
I walked the last 4 miles because my leg gave out.
Oh, I'm not surprised.
I ran the first 22 miles.
That's good. Pretty good. Fantastic. But no, I just do it. I don't do it for a charity. I just do it because I'm a baller.
Yeah.
No,
that's
anyway.
What ballers are known for, their activity.
But in fact, can you see? Oh, in fact, again, you guys can't do this, but I'll show this to James. You can actually see my office building. So we're looking.
I can see the Shard.
Yeah, see the Shard, and then you've got this really ugly building next to it.
Looks
that's
like
Guy's Hospital.
It looks like a chocolate chip cookie biscuit.
Yes, that's it. Guy's Hospital.
Okay.
And then if you come down to the bottom of the Shard, and you go right, you see another kind of glass looking building.
Yeah.
That's it.
Okay. Do you mean left?
Yeah, sorry, left.
I was going to say. Forget everything on the right hand side. Yeah.
You see it just kind of stick it up, and it looks like it's got this kind of crane on the top.
Looks green.
Yeah, kind of greeny, glassy.
That's where you work?
That's where I work, yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah. You can actually see the...
Is that actually near the Shard, or is this just
it's
like
right
an,
next
an
to the Shard.
Art
it's,
of perspective?
It's a sister building of the Shard.
The Shard. Sean Bean works there.
It's great. But,
is it like its little sister, like the Shardette?
Yeah. Well, it's the same architecture. It's part of the same complex, so it's built like around the same time.
This thing's been going for 10 minutes. We haven't mentioned the baby yet.
Screw it, mate. You ruined your life.
London architecture trains.
Well, not? I mean, it's quite interesting.
Nerdy
it's not often you get to think about where you actually are, like when you're doing a podcast.
I guess there's only so much you could say at like my house or your flat.
Yeah.
What's the architecture like?
I saw something on Facebook again. We will get onto Luna in a minute because it's. It will tie in. I've got this really nice like idea of how
show
to talk
me
about
your
it.
Segue. I'm intrigued.
It's not a segue. It's just it's something we can talk about because it's something that I can relate to from being a kid myself. and watching my dad go to work. But this morning I saw you put on Facebook saying, oh, commuting, fun. Because you don't do that. You walk to work, don't you?
Yes, I have commuted before, though. Mm. I worked in London for 6 months, about 4 or 5 years
from
ago.
From Bedford?
From Maids... No, I lived... Where the hell did I live?
Did you live in a caravan?
Yeah, I lived in a caravan. So where the...
Bikey!
Where the M20 is down in Kent, where it joins the M25, and you've also
the
got
triangle.
the option of the M2, is it?
No, M26.
M26. That does make a triangle. Yeah. I lived slap bang in the middle of that triangle, in the valley of between Otford and some other place. I think Shoreham was the train I got every morning, but that's where I lived, and I commuted from there every day into London for a 6 month period, and I hated it. Mm. I absolutely hated it.
So, what was it like this morning? Was it really busy on the train?
No, it wasn't too bad. I got a very, very early train. I gave myself way too much time. I got here in about 1 hour and 10 minutes too early.
Cool. What time did you leave?
I left my house at about 6:30.
Nice.
And I got a 7:09 train. And the platform was very busy and the train was very busy, but I seemed to find the one empty seat. So
Was it the train from Bedford to...
London, St Pancras, and then I got the tube to Vauxhall and walked here.
What was the tube like? Was that busy?
Nah, empty. This is what I was going to say to you. You say like it's always warm. I've only ever been warm on the tube when it's like full of people, especially after a gig or something. You know, everyone goes to the same tube station. You know, with Brixton, Wembley, the O2, all of them, and you're just surrounded by sweaty people wearing the same band T-shirt as you. I've actually been sick on the tube before because I've been so hot in those kind of scenarios. After a System of a Down concert, but this morning it was so empty. I was really, really surprised, I was actually quite cold.
But you were going against traffic, really.
I guess
you?
So, yeah.
Because the Victoria line comes up from Brixton. Try and get on a Brixton in the morning. Oh, it's a nightmare.
Really?
It's just a bit busy, and obviously when the trains go down, everyone tries to get on the tube. And at the moment, London Bridge is shut. For like massive refurb, so it's only the tube lines going into there and so on and so forth, so everything's busy.
I
get on the line that goes up through Bedford this morning,
because
it goes up through Elephant Castle and Blackfriars and then up to St Pancras and stuff like that, which is quite interesting. But commuting to work,
yes,
the point of it is like it's something, one of my fondest memories of my dad, not that he's dead, that may sound like he's dead, he's not dead, but well, obviously being a kid is him going to work in the morning.
Why was that a fond memory for you?
I don't know.
That's a bit like, most people don't like it when their dad goes.
No. It was weird because I can remember like always seeing my dad off. I'm like, bye daddy, bye, have a good day, miss you. And then be like, oh, now he's gone, get the fucking scotch and the cigars out. But
how old were you?
I still live at home. But no, it was kind of, and then him coming back in the evening.
Yeah.
And him coming back in his suit. And obviously, I must admit, back then, it was the early 90s, and he was a smoker. And one of my fondest memories is when we picked him up from the train station, Mummy would, drive us down, and he'd get in the car with a freshly lit cigarette. One of the best memories in the world. I mean, I'm not a smoker, I'm not a passive smoker, like anything like that. And, I enjoy a good cigar with scotch, and that's about it. But it's still a great memory for me. He would sit in the same place on the couch with his cup of tea and his digestive biscuit. And the cat would come, because he had a cat called China, which he got from a Chinese restaurant when it was a kitten. They lived above it, him and his girlfriend at the time. And so when I was born, she was already 15 years old. She was a ratty cat, not very nice cat. And but she would only be nice to my dad. And because my dad actually apparently had to hand rear her, which is quite sweet. My dad is quite... He's the best dad in the world, obviously, but and I get on with him so well, but he has a tendency to be a proper bloke and be really moody about stuff. Then all of a sudden, he'll be the most touching bloke you've ever met in your entire life and, hand-rear a kitten and bring it up. But anyway, so he only liked dad, and it was always a really nice memory, And
you talk about, the cigarette thing. I haven't been much of a smoker myself, but you say, it's a really fond memory. They say smell is, one of the biggest memory... inducers, I guess. Yeah. And whilst I don't think it's a particularly nice smell, I can imagine how sort of the smell of stale smoke or anything like that can sort of really... No. I remember coming around your house as a kid and your house smelling of stale smoke. And I always, whenever I went to anyone else's houses who smoked, I always associated it with you.
Which is funny now because my parents have completely given up smoking. And they become very, very... they were never inactive, but they've taken up exercise in a major way, as in my dad's done the London, Brighton and all that kind of stuff. But, it's great. And obviously Luna's, and I think it's, how does it feel to leave the house, leave your beautiful wife and your beautiful baby every morning to...
It is pretty weird, if I'm being perfectly honest. It was something that initially I thought I wouldn't have too much of a problem with. Mm.
they say some people go to work to chill out. You know, I honestly feel like, you know, I've mentioned the name of the company I work for, so hopefully I won't get in trouble for this, but I feel like my job is really easy. Mm. Like, I really don't do that much for what I do. So I feel like I'm going to work to relax, if that makes sense. So if any, I kind of thought I'd look forward to, like, okay, this is a bit of time off, a bit of time but away from the noise and the hustle and bustle. Not that I dislike it in any way, but I work at home type thing. But it's been the last week or so actually has been quite hard, because initially Luna was a sleeping, eating, pooping machine, and it was as much as it was wonderful and as much as I'm thoroughly enjoying it, there wasn't much of an art to it. It was just like, okay, I've looked at you all day being this sleepy, and yes, you're gorgeous, but I'm not really missing much. Now that she is alert, more interactive, she started making more noises, she coos, she giggles, she smiles, I feel like I'm missing out. You know, in the morning when I leave, she's still asleep. And I give her a little kiss on the head and everything. She just looks so peaceful. But I know that an hour later, I'll be at work sitting at that desk doing, you know, banal stuff. And she will be awake and alert, and Beth will be having the time of her life with her, you know, looking around, cooing, introducing her to stuff. And I'll go home that day and I'll be like, oh, you missed this. She did this today. And
Beth's easily pleased, mate. Like, you're not missing nothing. You're missing... Oh, she smiled!
But saying that... you do get that really, really wonderful thing of when you do come home, is they recognise you because you haven't been there all day. Like, if you think those first 2 weeks I was there with her every day, she heard my voice, she got used to me. Those 2 weeks Beth was in hospital, she only heard my voice, you know, there wasn't anything else. Now, I'm going to work and I'm coming home, I walk through the front door, Daddy's home. When she hears that, if she's like on Beth's shoulder, on Beth's lap and she's not asleep, she will turn to look at me. You know, whether it's just the noise at all of coming in the front door, or if it is just the wonder of hearing my voice. I'd like to think it's the latter, because as kids get older, they do that thing of Daddy's home, run to the front door, give him a big hug. And it's that thing of, you haven't seen him in so long. Yes, that euphoria lasts seconds, because as soon as you're home and they've hugged you, they'll run off and carry on doing the thing they were doing or playing with the toy they were playing with. But that's a really, really wonderful feeling to be missed that much by someone who sort of, I say barely knows you. You are sort of, I guess, in their eyes, you are kind of their world and everything. Luna's only 7 weeks old, so she doesn't have that much of a scope yet. But there's times in the night, for example, when she's crying and I'll lean over her cot and she just looks up and she smiles. And I think it's just that wonderment of, I was upset before. That's why I'm crying, I'm hungry, I want a cuddle, I want this, I want that, and I look up and I get what I want, and she smiles, and that feel, that I've never ever felt that in my life, and it's absolutely wonderful. It's one thing, you know, to meet someone in your life, like I met Beth and you met Louise, and have them want to see you and have them want to be with you. You get those texts when you're first together, I miss you, let's be together, I wish we could live together, I wish we could get married, and all those wonderful things. But this is someone you haven't met, this is someone you've created, this is someone who's half you, and they're smiling because they're looking at you. That's just, I can't describe it. It's amazing. It's good. It's absolutely amazing.
Your day?
It does make my day, but she, at the moment, she's doing it at really inopportune times. I mentioned like 4 a.m. You wake up, wow, 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 I'm crying. Okay, change nappy, feed you, put you back in the basket. Wow, wow, wow. So, okay, you've been fed, you've been changed. I'm not giving you anything else. Lean over the basket. Luna, you need to, she's smiling again. I can't be mad at you. It's so difficult to be mad at you right now.
That's interesting. So obviously she's like that, and she's going to turn into a proper, like, you know, little lady. But before we go on to that, because I have a few questions I want to ask you, and hopefully they're going to be quite tough questions, because Luna's 7 weeks old.
Yes.
But tonight's your first night. Second night?
So my second night away from her.
Really?
Yes. I think I touched on this in the first podcast. The 2 weeks that I was looking after her...
I remember you saying. This is your first... this is your first night where Beth's at home?
Yeah, okay, in that respect. It's the first night I'm away from my family. In sort of in that capacity. Beth's looking after Luna by herself. It's the first night Beth is spending alone with Luna.
Is it actually the first night since she's been born that you're not going to be there and she's going to be by herself?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, I hope she's up to the task.
I was talking to her about it yesterday. It's quite funny, actually. I know that she'll be fine because, if I'm being perfectly honest, the last couple of nights she's done almost everything baby-related anyway. I've been a bit lazy with work and everything, and the length of time that we stay up in the night. I've been... When Luna cries, I've been the one to stay in bed and nudge her, oh, you do it.
Yeah,
and,
she's got a bit of making up to do, hasn't she? Oh, I had a 2 week holiday in a hospital, oh!
What's wonderful is, as lazy as that makes me sound, that's almost exactly right. Beth has missed doing those little things. Yes, I did it for 2 weeks straight. and I didn't have a problem with it. You know, it's my responsibility, and I didn't mind doing it. But because Beth missed that,
you missed
the little things. This is what she kept saying to me. Like, I miss hearing her cry. I miss changing a nappy. You know, the things that people complain about. Yeah. She missed doing the things. And at the moment, she's absolutely fine with doing everything. And then I don't know how long it will last, but still. I think
from what I see of people, you just kind of get into the routine. You touched on it fantastically last time, that you have to do it all by yourself. And Beth's not been there, and it's been really tough for you. And you earn your stripes, because you could always say, to a degree, that pregnancy is a woman's job, right? The man, all he has to do is sit there and try not to piss her off. You look like a beached whale. Don't. That is your entire job.
Yes.
You know, and you're just there to support. And then even when the baby first comes, she's breastfeeding or bottle feeding, but still. She's mother.
Yes.
You know, your daddy, you go out and, you know, do that. And
she would have had that connection with Luna 9 months longer than me.
Yeah.
You know, I can feel her kicking. I can hear all the stories Beth is telling me about how it feels. But I can't, can you imagine? Like, imagine you needed a poo really bad. And
all
you felt that
months.
Poo move inside you.
Yeah,
you
know, pretty much.
You'd start to get attached.
Went to the gym today and I had a van and forgot to go to the toilet first, cut off, and I was like, yeah, why are you still running? But no, I think you've earned your stripes, you know, you've kind of given back.
People keep telling me that. People say, like, you know, I'm really proud of you, not everyone would do that, la la la.
I'm not
la,
proud
la.
Of you, mate. It's your own fault for having a kid.
I keep losing perspective on it, because there's the part of me that went into damage control mode. I'd like to think I'm an adult at this stage of my life. When the news of, I think I said this in the last podcast, the news of getting pregnant, the news of, I knew that I was having a child, that to me was the moment I became a dad. Like, some other people say differently, like, I wasn't a dad till I held it, but I instantly, you know, I started doing more adult things as soon as I found that out. It was like, Beth went into hospital and it was horrible, but I kind of just got on with it. I went into damage control. Okay, that really
bit
sucks.
Time spirit.
Yeah. But Beth needs feeding. I've got to feed Luna. La, la, la.
Beth needs feeding,
yeah. And Beth needs her nappy change. So yeah, that just kind of happened. But thinking about it the other way around, if any of my friends were in the same kind of scenario, you know, newborn baby, wife went into hospital, exactly like you did, I'd want to give them a telephone call, ask if there was anything I could do to help, and tell them how proud of them I am, because it's not easy.
It's not by yourself. So let's go. That's quite depressing, because you know.
Yeah, let's go to some fun stuff.
Let's go to fun stuff. That now I want to, you know, learn more about you and Beth and how you met. Well, we found out how you met last time.
Yes.
Conference 2011.
That's the first time I saw her. Met her with the
kitchen incident.
Yeah.
T-boy. Speaking of it, should put a camera. No, what I want to know now is first date.
First date.
What happened on the first date? Because obviously, you know, you kind of think, you live together now, you've got to think back. And now I can remember my first date with Louise, but I can't.
Did you like take her out?
Out.
You took her out.
But no, yeah. So go on, tell us.
I cannot pinpoint a first date with Beth. I can tell you of two situations though. The time that we count as us getting together, like the kind of initiation, and then the first time we went out together. Mm. So the 23rd of June 2011, I was still single, but I had been sort of speaking to Beth for sort of 2 months in a row. basically just taking any opportunity I could to talk to her. Like, we spoke loads at work, we emailed each other all the time, we texted each other all the time. I knew that she was out of an evening with someone else I worked with, a woman called Nikki, and they did sort of random stuff every week. I know that sounds strange, but they would try like salsa classes, yoga classes. Mm-hmm. They'd try all these little different things, hate each and every one of them and only go 1 week at a time. But hey, they dabbled in each.
All week, she's sitting there going, oh, we can do salsa class. I can't wait. Afterwards, she's like, well, that shit.
You've hit the nail on the head. It'd be like the yoga classes. Yeah, buy the yoga mat. I'll buy I want to say the yoga toga. I think that's quite a good way. Buy the yoga toga, buy the bouncy ball, all that shit. One yoga lesson. Yeah, that was crap. Jacket all in.
I can actually picture, I can't do an impression of Beth, but like, she has the best way of saying, well, this is shit. Like, she just says it, oh, this is shit. And her face all screws up, doesn't it? She goes, shit.
That was bollocks. She and Nikki went to, I can only describe it as some kind of yoga class, but the way she described it to me afterwards was that this woman was quite flowery, used a lot of flowery language. I think yoga can be quite, you know, invigorating and namaste and all that stuff, but this sounded far more flowery and far more weird and sort of kooky, if you will. And,
so now are we going to go into dog's paws?
It wasn't poses that she mentioned, the bit that made me laugh, the thing that stuck with me from the conversations I had with her this evening, was she would sort of, you know, all the breathing exercises, and you sound really floaty, like Florence and the Machine. And she would, Beth phrased this, I'm sure it wasn't this, but the phrase Beth uses is, raise your panini. I imagine she's, yeah, exactly. I assume, like, panini is probably referred to some kind of centre or some kind of core, and when you're doing these poses, when you're doing these breathing exercises, you bring yourself up. But she, it probably wasn't even panini, it was probably like...
Punani. It's probably like a nice way of saying...
Raise your punani.
But no.
Stick your vag in the air.
Yeah, but that's it. That's, you've got to, you lay on the floor and they kind of do this thing where they... I don't know what the movie is, where they do these pelvic thrusts into the air.
Yeah.
Now, so that's quite... She may have been like, raise your punani, but she said punini instead. Maybe something like that.
I'll get onto how this conversation came about, but I was at home, lonely, probably drinking. I probably had a curry. I probably played an immense amount of Call of Duty. And then I was texting Beth, and she said that after this class, her and Nikki had gone to a pub in Bedford on the other side of the river called the King's Arms. One of three King's Arms in the whole of Bedford, actually. And she said, like, you know, do you want to come join us? And of course I did. I you know, made myself look presentable. I chucked on a nice shirt. Practically ran down there, and I was in my head. I didn't think anything would happen.
Oh my god, I have someone text me. Yeah. I can put the Call of Duty away, I can stop ordering those guns online and picking which school. And now I can run down there, and I can imagine you running down the street going, yay!
I have no shame. I have no shame in admitting how desperate this sounds, but it was like, oh my god. There. Female interaction, and I did. I practically ran to this.
I can imagine you're on the Russian Bride website going, no, how do I cancel my order? Yeah. Empty my basket. I don't need them anymore.
Mate, I'd already emptied my basket all over the keyboard a couple of times that night.
Oh, nice.
Enough about that. Yeah,
nice.
All right, zing. Nice. Oh Christ, where was I?
Yes. So you're running.
So
down
I knew I wanted stuff to happen with Beth, but I didn't want to push it, because in some examples prior to Beth, I had pushed it and ruined it. You know, no girl likes a desperate man.
Girl likes being shagged and then left.
They can smell desperation a mile away.
They really can.
But either way, I went to this pub, sat there chatting to them for ages. We had a few drinks. We were getting a bit tipsy. It was quite fun. Mm. Nikki left and ended up just being me and Beth. I found out at this particular meeting that Beth used to work there and she knew the landlord. Landlord locked us in. It was me, Beth and him.
Sorry. I think you would need to say landlord let us have a lock in rather than landlord locked us in and left you there. And he was like, the alarm was on his side.
I didn't say he left us there, but he did lock us in. That's what a lock in is.
Yeah,
whatever way you want to phrase it, he locked us in.
Yeah, it just sounds so weird when you put it like that.
So yeah, I was sitting chatting to Beth and this landlord guy, I can't remember his name, for ages. I've never ever been a smoker. I can count on one hand how many times I've had an actual cigarette, but he was very, very forceful in trying to get me to smoke a cigarette, and I think I got through half of one and stubbed it out. It was fucking horrible. But we were still drinking, still chatting, still doing stuff. We eventually went outside. He must have, I guess, unlocked the door. And we sat in the beer garden for a bit. Beth was still smoking at this stage. Just chatting and chatting and chatting. And I just kept looking. I was like, I could just talk to you for ages. Mm. This is wonderful. There was a couple of points where she mentioned how skanky she thought she looked. I think this was a fishing for compliment type situation. Because she was wearing, in retrospect, this horrible tracksuit. Because she'd been to this yoga class type thing. And I just kept telling her how beautiful she was. And I could see it in her eyes. It was that thing of, oh God, please don't tell me I'm beautiful. I'm falling for you. I know that sounds really big-headed, but she's told me since that that's kind of what was happening. It's wonderful. We left the King's Arms. I think it was like midnight or 1 a.m. or something.
That's like the shortest locking in history.
Well, it was a fucking Thursday night or something. It wasn't like...
Media Thursdays. Weekend.
Shut your face.
When you work in London, it's all about Media Thursdays.
Okay, so I'm talking about Bedford here, so, you know...
Oh yeah, everything that shuts down at 5 o'clock.
Hey, mate, I make the rules. Don't hate the player, hate the game. Right? We've left the pub, we've walked around the corner, we've kind of gone through this kind of back alley thing to get back onto the main road. And for the life of me, I still don't know why she did this, but we were at the park inn.
You take there, the back alley?
Yeah, Tom. I'm leaving.
That's how to ruin the story. No, sorry, Karen. It's beautiful.
The park inn where it is in Bedford, there's this like weird back alley and there's like a multi-story car park inside it. Shall you?
Please stop saying back alley.
Took her out of the back end. So we sat on this wall. She said, let's sit on this wall. We hadn't walked 5 minutes. It wasn't like she wanted to rest her feet. Don't know how or why. And she sat to my left. She sat
crazy
on this wall.
Crazy.
And then I sat like next to her. Mm. I looked over to my right. I looked up sort of the main Bedford Street. And I don't know what I said. I started a sentence. I thrust my head to the left to look at her, and then she was in my face and she was kissing me.
What a slut!
Literally out of nowhere.
Does she not know women must never make the first move?
I'm glad she did, because I'm such a pussy. I never would have.
That is true.
I never would have made the first move. I am a huge pussy.
I mean, this is like our friend Michael.
Our other friend Michael. We shouldn't be mean about Michael on a podcast.
No. But he's like you. I mean, I've always been very go getter and. Sorry, that actually sounds probably a bit rapey. Like, go get her.
Go get her.
But no, I've always been more like
a rapist.
No, can't say shit like that. That's,
can't I?
No. But why does this keep happening to me? No. You can't. I've always been traditional. I make the first move. I ask the girl on a date. I do the first kiss. You know, I've always been. You know, I've been pretty. Charming, I want to say, but it sounds a bit gay. But I made the first move. But you and Michael have always been very reserved, charming.
We play the long game.
You play the long.
We play the game that's so long that girls give up and move on.
Yeah.
But thankfully, Beth did not.
In fact, Michael's played the long game so much that the girl he's still trying to get with lives in America.
Oh, don't be mean.
I'm not being mean.
You
are.
He's beautiful.
That's the funny thing is, ladies out there, Michael is one of the best men you'll ever meet in your entire life. He's beautiful. He's attractive. Looks a little bit like a skinny, like, you know, Hugh Jackman when he has his chops. And yeah, he really needs to learn to shave. Apart from that, he's the best man in the world, but he's such a gentleman, he could never ever make the first move, and he needs a girl like Beth, but not Beth, because she's yours.
We'll get to that. She's his back. No, he is her backup husband. If I die, yeah.
Really?
He's number two.
He's number two.
Come to my number two, man. So that happened. She kissed me, I kissed her back. I said, oh my god, I'm so glad you did that, drunkenly. Invited her back to my house. It didn't happen. She was quite cool about it. She went back to her house, but that was it.
So you invited her back?
Oh yeah, that was all I needed. Oh my god, you like me back? Cool, let's go do stuff.
Yeah,
I was.
And she said no. She said
no. She was really cool about it. You know, she was like, no, let's not rush this. You know, this is really exciting for me. I really like you. Blah 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 blah.
I've never been rejected after a first kiss. I don't know what that feels like.
It wasn't a rejection. It was I really like you, but you know.
Oh, actually, that sounds
really bad, doesn't it? Oh shit!
I really like you, but I'm not a slut, even though I just kissed you.
Okay. I don't think kissing is particularly slutty.
No,
you know,
I am joking.
There you go.
Bit of
admiration for it there. That happened there. Yes, but that was it. As of that point, we were talking all the time, texting all the time, trying to meet up as much as we could. And that's kind of how we define our relationship starting. We count it from the 23rd of June 2011, but that wasn't really a date.
No.
That was when it started, but we never had a date. We were just such good friends, and it just built into this thing that we were friends, but we clearly both wanted more and would never admit it to each other sober, because we were both clearly very shy. Beth slightly less shy than me.
Yeah, but Beth who just goes for it. Good girl.
What I define as our first date is fucking lame, but it's a wonderful story.
No, I that story could sound lame to some people, but I think it's really sweet.
Thank you.
Apart from running you down the street going, female interaction! I need it!
Yeah, it's pretty lame. Before we got together, we planned to have this payday trip to Milton Keynes.
Oh.
We always get paid on the 27th. So this is what, 4 days after we get together, we planned to go to Milton Keynes that evening. Even as friends, we were going to go to Milton Keynes, do some shopping, grab a Burger King or something. Hey man, that's a long game. Chicks love shopping.
Yeah.
Long game. I can be a shopping buddy. There you go.
I tried that with Louise, and it's funny, when me and Louise met, we were doing this show and we were both rehearsing, and I quite fancied her, and I found out that she fancied me.
Yeah.
And I have this big rule of like, well, it doesn't always work, as I'm sure people
of no fat chicks.
you don't shit where you eat. So when I do a show, when you're doing a show, you get very close to people.
Of course.
And you know, you get very and so show flings are a big thing, and I've always tried to avoid them. And so I was trying to keep my distance from them. And then the director told me that Louise actually fancied me. And
it's like the playground. Oh, she fancied.
Yeah, no, I was keeping my distance, man. I was working like nights at the time, and then I was doing the rehearsals, and it was really tough. And so I was like, fine, I'll ask her out, because I obviously liked her. And I went up, so I said, so you're Australian in the UK, you know, you've got Westfields in Australia, did you want to go to the Westfield here? And I was like, yeah. And she was like, oh, I need to buy some new. Oh, fantastic, can I bring my friend Carmen? Face palm.
Oh,
it was
dude.
So bad. So
Friend zone.
Luckily, she fancied me, but she thought I didn't fancy her. So it was kind of like the two-way thing. And so her friend might, because she didn't know that I fancied her, obviously, but she fancied me, and it was the same the other way around. But yeah. Then the director got involved and started playing matchmaker, and then the director then told Louise that, you know, he's asking out on a date, you stupid bitch. And then
hope he said it like that as well, because in my head I'm thinking, like, man asks you out, you bring your friend, moron.
But then again, you know, she wasn't paying attention and we were rehearsing lots. But anyway, carry on. So you decided to go to Milton Keynes, the coolest place on earth.
Oh yeah, Milton Keynes, the big shopping centre.
Concrete City.
Yeah, what's it called? The Centre MK, they call it. Bearing in mind, we'd agreed to go there as like friends. She obviously went to buy some clothes. I had a lot of, what's that word when you can just spunk cash for no reason? Disposable income. Load of disposable income. I think I wanted to go to the Lego shop. I think I wanted some Lego. I probably wanted some new clothes, but you know, secretly
Lego is cool.
It was just to spend time with her. Mm. Having did what we did 4 days earlier, the whole dynamic of it changed. We'd never been shopping before, but we'd spent time together outside
your
of work.
Your entire life, you had never been shopping before.
With her. You fucking idiot.
You did say I'd never been shopping before.
Okay, this was my first ever shopping trip. I've never been shopping. We'd been outside
walked into
of work
the shop,
before.
I picked something up, and then I was like, what do I do now? Please pay here. Please pay? Pay? What do I have to pay for? I don't understand how this works. Yeah. Are we not in communist Russia?
That'll be £450, please. Pounds? What is this money?
Here, come here. Bang, 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 bang.
Yeah, yeah. Punch them in the face.
Punch him in the face. Okay, there's your pound, you dick.
This was our first time together out of a work scenario where the dynamic was completely different.
We didn't know how to drag out a story, don't
we? Fucking hell, it's ridiculous. We've got, 15 minutes before
we
wrap this
snap
up.
Snap on.
Right, okay, so the dynamic of it was different. Yeah. We weren't James and Beth friends who were shopping. We were James and Beth, you know, digging on each other. You know, there was kissing, there was holding hands, you know, there was the talk about, you know, do you want to come around at the weekend? It was cool.
Sparks flying. You know, nice, bad time of the month. Maybe come around next weekend.
We'd go around the clothes shops and it wasn't, you know, should I get this? You know, that doesn't suit you. It was, hey, you should get this because that looks really sexy. The word sexy came up. It was like, oh my God, this is awesome.
Did you take it downstairs in Dan Summers?
I can't remember if there is an Ann Summers
probably is Milton Keynes.
But I remember going to La Senza.
Oh.
Yeah. The Lidl of the Ann Summers world. No, I really like La Senza. It's arguably
better. Yeah, you can't go back now, mate.
If I remember rightly, we went to
a little
coffee. I think it was one of those Starbucks. It was like almost like a counter. It wasn't like a full-on Starbucks. It's just like a guy.
You didn't even take her inside the store. You took her to a stand. You took her to a guy with
this
a stand.
This was the summer. This was the 27th of June, 2011. It was hot. You know, the MK has this outsidey type bit, and we sat there for a while. And again, it was just one of those things. We just sat there talking, and it was like, oh my God, I could just talk to you forever. This was the evening. I offered to buy her dinner, but she didn't want it.
Why?
She just didn't. We went back to we drove back to my flat that evening. I made her a dinner and we ate it. And then I said, "Can you give me 10 minutes? I'm just gonna do something."
She's gonna kick the prostitutes out of my bedroom.
And she was like, "Okay, you know what's going on?
Bit freaky. I'm just gonna go get the gimp mask and I'm gonna, like, you know, sorry, get them a hypno." Coy, carry on.
No, listeners can't see this, but I'm sinking to the floor in sheer disgust. What the fuck he's talking about?
I don't know, then.
Right.
Well, you can't. I don't know. A girl saying, "I'm just going to go for 10 minutes and freshen up." Yeah.
I didn't say
fine.
Freshen up. I didn't say something more comfortable. I said I'm just going to go do something.
Okay.
fine. That sounds worse. I planned to give her a romantic massage. I went into my bedroom. I lit some candles. I put on some nice music. I don't care if it sounds gay. And you know, nice mood lighting and all that shit. And then she came into the room and she said, What's this?
Is this where you murder them? Yeah. What's the video camera doing?
Yeah. My wife and mother of my child, this is where I murdered her. Yeah, this makes perfect sense. Get a bit sick of you, actually.
Yeah.
I don't know why I invited you here. And I said, she said, "What's this?" And I said, "I would like to give you a massage."
What?
And she said, "Okay, you're not, like, expecting anything, are you?" I'm assuming she meant referring to sex. Considering we'd only been doing what we were doing.
Pay me, I'm a professional masseuse.
Get out of my hotel room now. Actually leave and never come back. This is the last podcast I will ever do with you. I thoroughly enjoyed the first one. This has been 35 minutes of fucking pain.
Can I point out, this is beautiful. But you are setting yourself up for this.
You asked me a question. I don't care if it sounds gay. I'm giving you
beautiful.
The answer.
No, it's beautiful. Carry on.
She said, "Are you expecting anything?" Assuming, you know, referring to sex. We'd been doing what we're doing for such a short space of time. I said, "No, I just wanted to do this for you." And she actually started crying. crying, not like bawling, but she was really overwhelmed. She said, "No one has ever done anything this nice for me." She'd had a series of very, very shit boyfriends. Clearly none of them have ever offered to do something nice. Mm. Obviously, I'm in the still trying to really impress you stage. I can't remember the last time I did something like this. But this was obviously 4 days after we'd started doing what we were doing.
And I
gave her a massage, and she absolutely loved it. And she said that no one had ever done anything like that before. So that was our first date.
That is quite nice. And that is actually really beautiful.
Yeah,
that
so is. Shut the fuck up.
I just
what are you doing on your first date? Buy her a fucking Mackie D's and stick it in her ass.
No, but it was...
Not the Mackie D's.
This is my
Egg McMuffin.
Our first date ended up being like when I asked her out. Like, it was the same thing. We were sitting down, we met up, and she was like, come meet my sister quickly. Because they, at the time, they were both living in, like, because they're both Australian, obviously, come over, and they were living in, like, rooms in these different houses, in, like, other Australians' houses. And so we went down the street and there, met her boyfriend, her sister and her boyfriend, and they were like, should we all go to dinner together? Louise said that, and this is meant to be a date. Yeah. She's like, should we all go to dinner together? And I was like, no. And I've always got on with Steph, and from this moment I always got on with Steph, and we always kind of had a nice understanding. She looked at me and was like, should we go? And Louise said, should we go to dinner together? And Steph just looked at me and went, well, we're going to be a while, so we might meet you later. And yeah. I was like, thank fuck. Drag Louise. And it's only because she was nervous. She's not an idiot or nothing. She understood it was a date, but she just got really nervous.
Yeah.
And then so we walked up into Balham, where she lived at the time. She's like South London. And she, and we ended up, she was like, where do you want to go? She was like, I don't really know Balham that well. And I'll just finish that, mate.
Sure.
Yeah. And she was just like, I was like, well, let's just, she was like, where do you want to go? She was like, well, I like Pizza Express. So we went to Pizza Express.
Cool.
And it was really, really simple. And it was really nice. And I was...
I'm not sure if that's how you should refer to your first date with your now wife.
It was simple.
Hi, what's 2 + 2?
No, because it was...
Do you like clouds?
Because I didn't know Balham. At the time, I'd never been to Balham before. Now I go past the Pizza Express every day on my way to work. And because I was still living in Kent at the time. And we were walking around. She's like, oh, and I was like, come on, Louise, you must know somewhere in this area. And she was like... No, I was like, well, Pizza Express over there. She was like, yeah, brilliant, loved it, and it was nice. We just sat and we talked for hours, and it was beautiful. And the rest is, as they say, is history. And now, so, but your date does your first date is beautiful. I think it's.
I'm sorry that I've got two stories for a first date, but that's I can't pin it down.
I mean, you know, first dating and then going to Milton Keynes, going shopping, which is brilliant. You live in Bedford; it's the best you've got. And then taking her back and giving her a massage, and not then having sex with her. I'm impressed.
Ding.
I'm actually impressed by that.
There's probably thousands of men across the country now face-palming, but also loads of people going, yeah, good on you.
No, it's great. I mean, I personally think it could have been come across as really creepy as I took the piss.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it worked. You played the long game.
It could have been creepy, but then I've...
But the fact that Beth didn't find it creepy and you didn't think it would be creepy at the time just shows how perfect you are.
I'd like to think I set the mood quite well.
Did you?
Well, yeah, I had nice romantic music playing. There were candles. If there was candles and no music, maybe. But the music was really
or music
nice
and no candles. Did you not like ease it in? So did you have the music on, and then you said, but then you had the candles in the room. You said, that's nice music, isn't it? Oh, you like this? Yeah, it's not too. That's quite romantic, isn't it? Should we go in here? Oh, candles. Did you just throw it on her in like one go? Just open the door and be like, candles and music.
I didn't throw lit candles on her, if that's what you mean.
Hot melted wax. Just point out, it'll completely change your sex life.
Really?
Yeah, completely. Hot melted wax.
Okay.
Dripping on each other. Just do it.
Okay.
Do it, but whack your chest first. Okay. Anyway, right, we're running out of time here. So we're very going to quickly going to move on to a few, like, a little things I wanted to ask you. And now these are quite off the cuff. So what do you want Luna to do when she grows up?
I haven't put that much thought into it yet, but people have asked me already, like, what sort of child do you want her to be, or what sort of person do you want her to be? And I would like her to run the same path as I have, in the fact that I want her to be happy and independent. Mm. I don't really care or mind what she does with herself as long as she is happy and independent. Happiness, of course, comes from not necessarily doing a job that you love, but enjoying your life, you know, having good friends, having good family, being healthy, doing the things you like doing, hobbies, stuff like that, you know, or you don't have to have an amazing job to do that. I'd like to think I proved that myself. Mm. And independence in the same way that she can look after herself, and she doesn't need to rely on other people to be happy. It's one thing to have a very, you know, clever, successful child, but then if they're living in your pocket every 5 minutes and they rely on you for everything, they're almost never going to be able to look after themselves, you know, completely. And I think that's really, really important in this day and age. And I think it's really, really important in moving on with your life and also meeting other people. Can you imagine if you met a girl, let's say you were single now, and you met a girl, and she was, you know, our age, 26, 27, and she was really clever, really happy, really intelligent, but she still lived at home with her mum, and she relied on her mum, and her mum paid her phone bill and all this other stuff. And
Unfortunately, it is a bit weird as we're coming into our late 20s, but there is an element of that's just the world we live in now. You have to accept that some people still live at home.
It's not that I can't accept it. I'm just talking about what I want for my child. Yeah. Because I moved out of my house when I was 19, and I haven't gone back.
Yeah.
I can think of a single moment or single time where I asked to borrow money.
Yeah.
And other than that, I have been completely independent, and I absolutely love having my independence, and so does Beth. Beth is very much the same as me, and I want Luna to have that because it opens up a world of possibility. When you don't have to rely on someone, your world is that much more of an oyster. And I think it contributes to the first attribute I wanted to have, happiness. You know, the people who rely on other people, the people who rely on their mum and this, that and the other, you'd be like, oh, do you want to do this at the weekend? Oh, I can't, I've got to do this with my mum.
So again, without being mean to our good friend Michael, do you think he's not happy then?
I know that Michael is happy. Michael is very, very capable of creating his own happiness. In a weird way, he is independent because he doesn't need other people to be happy. He's very, very confident in being happy by himself. He does live at home. He is reliant on that element. But if for whatever reason there was some huge change up tomorrow and his mum or dad kicked him out and said, you've got to find your own place, I know that he would, and he can afford it. Mm. And I know that he'd be fine. Yeah. I'm talking about the people who rely on other people. Okay, maybe he's living at home was a bad example. I know some people and other people that know other people that just rely on other people. You know them. They're those people that text you on a Saturday morning at 9 a.m. like, what are you doing? Let me come around. Let me see you. And it's because they have nothing better to do because they can't amuse themselves. I love Luna to bits, but I don't want her to be like that. I want her to be happy in her own life. And I think it does contribute to helping, you know, find someone as well.
So obviously coming down to London there, you've got a lot of people, and obviously you see people every day when they go to work, but obviously London's, you know, mega busy. So when you're walking around, do you ever see women maybe mid-20s, maybe some of them, especially in London, you see them in suits and you think, that could be Luna in 20 years.
Yeah, that would be wonderful if she, as long as...
No. But I mean, what I'm saying is not like... Have you done that? Have you ever had that kind of thought process that that could be my kid in 20 years' time?
I'll be perfectly honest. It sounds really bad. I haven't done it with anyone who looks successful. I've done it with like those people on Jeremy Kyle and those people like, you know. Pitbull's music videos and stuff where they're like wearing hardly anything and gyrating under them. And I'm like, oh my God, I really hope that's not Luna.
you don't want that to happen.
Oh no, of course. But those are the ones that have crossed my mind.
Oh my God, I so want my daughter to be like that when she's older. I want her to be like the next Kim Kardashian.
Oh my God. I know that sounds really bad because I should be, you know, looking at really successful, you know, people who are doing really well for themselves and thinking that could be Luna. But unfortunately, that hasn't crossed my mind yet. I have thought about what I want her to be like, though, and I want her to be happy and independent. And I think those are the things I'm going to reinforce when she grows up and when she can understand the English language and when I have to start, you know, being a bit mean, I guess, teaching her lessons and taking toys away. Tough love, is, you know, happiness and independence, because it's so easy to just constantly give kids what they want, but then they, I don't mean about like food and stuff, but like, you know, the toys that they want and the clothes that they want, and, you know, I want this new iPad and stuff like that. It's like, then they are going to rely on you, then they are going to become spoiled, and I do not want that.
But say she's going to like university and she's about to, you know, and she's like, well, Dad, I need a laptop for university.
That's different because I think that's a learning tool to help her advance what she's doing. But if she's like, okay, I want this 800 quid iMac, and I know for a fact that she can get by with a 300-400 quid HP Windows jobby, I would say to her, okay, I will help you buy a laptop. I can afford this much. I can contribute this much. If you feel like you really need an iMac, justify it to me. Yeah. If you can justify to me why an 800 quid iMac is better than this, then yeah, I'll buy it for you. She would have to give me a really fucking good reason.
It's interesting because I one of the things about this, obviously we're going to put these going on like iTunes and all the others, like Stitcher and other outlets for podcasting, so people can listen to them. But it'd be interesting in 20 years' time for you to listen back to these and see how you felt. Because obviously you'll be a completely different man by then, and Luna will be obviously completely different.
Should be a completely different man.
For the people out there who hopefully are listening, we've got a nice little feature to end the show with. I think it's perfect time to end. And it's called James's Parenting Advice.
Oh my God, are you serious? Advice? So, I've only been doing this 7 weeks.
Exactly. It's going to be interesting, because as we go along, I think it'd be really nice to like hear your advice. So for someone in your shoes or around your shoes area, maybe they've just found out they're pregnant, maybe they've the kid's just been born, maybe they're a year into it. I don't know. I mean, obviously, you've got to relate it to yourself. It's going to be advice that you, as this point in time, as now an expert in having a 7-week-old kid, because that's the expert. You're at that stage. You're an expert of having a 7-week-old kid. Mm-hmm. You've done it. So you can now talk about up to that point as an expert, I'd say, because I can't talk about being a parent because I have no relation to it.
Okay. I guess it would be to do everything at your own pace. I've found consistently people in your life, people you care about and people you couldn't give two shits about, are going to try and give you advice. And they're going to say, do this with your kid. I've done it with my kid and it's worked brilliantly. Or don't do this. My friend did this with their kid and it's gone horribly
wrong.
No,
the kid's a brat.
The fact of the matter is they don't know your child like you know your child. And something that works for them might not necessarily work for you. Yes, listen to advice. Use it if you want to. But the fact of the matter is you will know your child better than anyone. And someone said to me, because I used to be really funny about people's kids, like not, you know, like I didn't want to be around them, but like even holding them, I used to think, oh, they're so fragile, you know, I don't want to hurt them, I don't want to do this. But since Luna was born, you know, I chuck her around, she's, you know, she's fine, she's robust. And people used to say to me, like, oh, you know, you say that now, but it's different when it's your own. And I was kind of like, oh, whatever. But it is absolutely different when it's your own. When it's your child, yes, there's the fear of doing stuff wrong, but this weird thing kicks in and it's almost like you know what to do. And that's what I found. It's yes, people will give you advice and it's like, oh, you should do this, or she's crying, go sort her out. And in your head you go, no, she's crying for no reason. She just wants to be picked up. I've already fed her, changed her, she's got everything she needs. I'm gonna leave her to cry. And you shouldn't feel guilty about those decisions that you've made, because as her parent you can only make the best decisions.
So it feels like you're avoiding the question saying you shouldn't listen to anyone else's advice, but give some advice, because at the end of the day this is your advice from your experience.
I'll put this in black and white. My first bit of advice for new parents out there, if you've got a 7-week-old, be confident in your decisions.
That's a nice bit of advice.
Don't feel guilty. If you're sitting there thinking, oh, she's crying, you know, oh, should I do this, should I do that? You should just know what to do and be confident in that. If you're getting this instinct to say, no, I'm going to leave you to cry because you've been a little bitch, be confident in that. I have had to do that with Luna once or twice, and it's not pleasant, but it works.
Well, you did the thing the other day, didn't you? You said, right, we leave her for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
If she stopped crying after that point, she doesn't need anything. If she's still crying, she may need something.
Yeah, so we go back to her, sort her out, try again, give her another 10, 15 minutes of our time. She's still crying. All right, I'm going to leave you for another 10.
You put an alarm on, didn't you?
Yeah.
That is a nice, fantastic bit of advice, and that's a great place to end it. I think this is the first time I ever met someone in a hotel room, and not got laid. So, but no, it's a fantastic bit of advice. Great way to end it. Be confident. Great, fantastic. This has been two friends and a baby who is not here again. One day we're going to have to invite her along as a special guest.
Yeah, little coup in the corner.
I've been Tom.
And I've been James. Thanks for listening. You bastards.